afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It is August 8th, 2021, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you got for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour, is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
We love those guys.
Yeah, and they're a little harder to find this week because of the smoke, but...
their storefront is obscured.
Obscured, yeah. We'll leave the light on the sign a little longer nowadays to illuminate where we're at. It's pretty smoky, but Pape Machinery is everything John Deere. We have tractors, mowers, implements, part sales and service. They do it all up there. Go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Pine Grove and Oasis Road there on Twin View Boulevard. And you can give them a call. 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Ta-da! Okay, so, hold on, bringing up my page here. So our guest today is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry.
Yeah, we're going to talk nuclear proliferation. Yeah, I'm having a problem.
Okay, we're not going to start until you get
I'm not going to say it again.
I remember.
I'm not going to say it wrong one more time.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I remember when, I'll have to make up a song for you. I remember when my sister couldn't say the word aluminum. And so my dad made us, this is what you do when you have five little kids aluminum in a car and you're driving across the country. We had to sing aluminum for miles.
Yeah. So now when she says it, she goes aluminum.
Yeah, I know. I've got to call her and ask her about that. I wonder if she even remembers that. She was a little kid. It's good to be the oldest.
What do you want to ask?
You remember
her?
All the good stuff.
Quick, say aluminum.
Oh my gosh. So he unfortunately is out. What was he doing? Grocery shopping?
Yeah, doing a little errand for the wife, and he would be in shortly.
Yeah, so he's racing around Virginia right now without us because he's not on the phone and at the grocery store. So, you know, in this little brief span of time we have to kill, I was going to bring up my favorite topic.
Do tell.
One guess what it is.
Favorite topic. Marijuana.
There you go. my second favorite topic's water. Well, they're kind of tied together, though. So you know, I was listening to the last show just prior, and they were talking about. I just caught part of it, so I'm not going to discuss what they were discussing because I don't know. But I did hear one statement that was made that, you know, all the chemicals and things that are just destroying our environment. And I got to tell you, if you haven't figured out that there are massive, massive amounts of chemicals on marijuana, and that is being grown over large swaths of land in rural America, unfortunately, at the current time, as far as I know, no major dope grows are burning up, although we have fires everywhere, which is just frustrating.
You know, I was up in Medford Thursday and Friday, and I was a little surprised to see all the commercial grows right off the side of the freeway. I mean, they have some are in greenhouses, some are right out in the open, have big fences around them. But
I think they're pretending they're hemp. Are they pretending they're hemp, or have we just gone full?
No, it's full on marijuana.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I mean, these are like an acre, you know, and right next to somebody's house. And but I counted several of them. I mean, they were drive along and it was like orchards.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's
and the thing is, we know from every product I think that's ever been made that it's cheaper to do it the wrong way than it is to do it the right way. So when you're looking at, you know, the correct chemicals, the correct licensing, all of that stuff, you know, people have said, oh well, if we just legalized it, all this crime would go away. Well, that's just dumb. I mean,
yeah,
guns are legal. Those are still illegally trafficked. People are legal, and they're illegally trafficked. Just look at the southern border. There's always money in crime. And it doesn't have to be an illegal substance to be a crime.
Well, there's a lot more money growing it illegally than legally.
Exactly.
And so what are they going to do?
So
pay their taxes?
Besides the fact that it's a bad thing, there are a lot of people who think, well, I'm not involved in any of that. I don't have any contact with that whatsoever. But you might. Are you part of an organization that takes money from the dope industry?
A lot of them do that you don't even know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You should be looking into that. Are you, I was speaking with someone who has a material yard last week. And I said, well, gee, I hope you're not hauling up into Siskiyou County. And they said, well, yeah, we've been hauling a lot lately. And I said, uh-huh, whereabouts? Off of A-12. I said, oh, well, that's terrific. That's where all the dope grows are. So you are actually hauling material, to illegal enterprises. And I said, you'd be lucky if your trucks aren't, pulled over and confiscated as part of the furtherance of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that and you think, are you accidentally helping? And for the people who think, well, it's not hurting anyone, you're totally hurt. You're totally helping. You are the problem.
Mm-hmm. I my former employer, I called on a customer down in Chico that, was in the
Soil business.
Thank you. Yeah. And they did bulk soil. They did bag soil. They couldn't make it fast enough. Their business was just exploding, and I think it still is. They buy just tons and tons and tons of amendments to grow. And, I mean, that market was there before, but it was a fairly small market, you know, for
gardening and
homeowners and gardening and that sort of thing. But now it's millions and millions of dollars.
I don't know. We're all going to have to kind of band together and do something with that because it's not benefiting anybody. And, you know, the other thing is if you think that, you know, buying it from these shops, well, I'm going to go to these shops because that's organic and they've tested all that. And, you know, we did a show a few weeks ago with, Dr. Drum.
Dr. Drum, yeah.
I can't think of his first name anyway. Whatever. Philip Drum. And he's a pharmacist anyway, has a lot of good information about marijuana. If you go on our website at wethepeopleradio.us. Yeah, it's wethepeopleradio.
You're looking at me like, what?
I don't know. I just saw an opportunity and I took it. So at wethepeopleradio.us, on the top, there's a tab. It says pot. And if you click on that, we've got a bunch of different shows on there. If you think it's not hurting anybody, definitely look at the shows with a lady named Libby Stout. And she is out of Colorado. Colorado's a mess right now. These states that have legalized it and gone in full blast, the media is doing a really good job of not telling you that it's a disaster. But the people who live there and the folks that are dealing with it, smoking it in the house while you have little kids. She explained very, very handily how it's hardwiring their brains for addiction. So you're not going to know for 15, 16, whenever, how many years later when your baby grows up and decides to try whatever, and then you find out you've hardwired them for addiction. Mm-hmm. So this is something that
Well, aside from the fact that, you know, mommy and daddy do it, I can do it.
Well, there's that.
How many kids have started smoking cigarettes because their parents did, you know? I mean,
I think in this room, what, one out of two?
Yeah.
And the only reason I didn't was because I had crappy lungs. And I don't think I had crappy lungs because my dad smoked cigarettes in the car for, you know, 3,000 miles across the country in the summertime with the windows rolled up. That's probably not it.
No.
But I don't think it helped the asthma part.
Probably not.
It's probably not all that good. But it's much more harmful than that. And the chemicals that they're finding on these illegal grows, and who knows where that pot goes? Who knows where that goes? You have no idea. It could mm-hmm. be in the shop right down the street from you. And I'm always looking for information. So if you know of, especially here in Northern California, if you know ties, if you've got, you see links between maybe some of the legal enterprise and some of the, criminal enterprise that's going on. If you know any of that stuff, I'd love to hear from you because I would love to pass that on to law enforcement. Oh my gosh. And right then the phone rang. That was awesome. It's probably Dr. Pry though. unless he teleported himself, he couldn't have done grocery shopping that fast though. Okay, so let's move to water real swiftly, to bring something. Oh, it was him. He was teleporting. So, okay, just to tie up the water thing, because we're hearing a lot about how with our forest fires, you know, it's because of climate change and blah, blah, blah. You know, I say this all the time, but if you've ever built a campfire, you know, it starts with little twigs, then medium sized stuff, and then, you know, a couple of good logs. Our forests out here in the West, in case you're not from here or haven't been here in the last 30 years, that's what they look like. They look like big, giant versions of the perfect campfire. And
All it needs a nice hot spark to set it off.
Yeah. So yeah,
it's layers. When you go out in a lot of these areas and just walk in the forest, it's like walking on a mattress. It's just thick with pine needles and debris that's just bone dry.
Yeah. The dead and dying trees, because we're not thinning our forests. They're all the same height. I mean, you're not having open space with meadows anymore because everyone got hysterical about any kind of, you know, clear cutting or open space. People like to blame PG&E, and in some cases it is their fault. In others, it's laws. They're only allowed to, and that's only because Congressman LaMalfa and some other people worked for years to pass legislation to remove, quote, hazard trees. That's all they can remove, hazard trees under the lines. Well, you and I both know if there's a 100-foot tree and it's 40 feet from the power line and it's leaning, but not leaning enough, so it's not a hazard tree. But as soon as that blows over, it's ripping the lines off the pole. So then, of course, you know, well, all the power lines should be underground. Well, that's just not possible everywhere in the entire United States. It's just silly. So anyway, just realize there are a lot more factors, and don't buy into all these stupid lies, you know. You look at our reservoirs up here. They have let all this water go on purpose. The reservoirs are not dry because of the drought. We had the water, and they've let it go. You know, the excuse is for the fish. But I guess where I come from, people count more than fish. So don't buy that lie either. Can't fix all that stuff with dopey solutions like that.
Like 50% of our water is just flushed.
50% of California's water is flushed to the ocean.
Yeah.
For
fish.
And I know you've heard my spiel a million times. Environmental purposes.
Oh, that's
I don't actually say it. For the fish. It's no. It's
nice. It's,
that's for the people who can't learn. I do it in a hearing impaired version for them. No, it's for environmental purposes. But you know what? They don't tell anybody that.
Nope.
They just tell them that it's all going
environmental.
For those bad agriculture people. I'm always seeing stuff online, you know, oh, those nut trees are using all the water, and I'm thinking, you're an idiot.
Well, and that's a fact a lot of people don't know or have forgotten, is this whole Central Valley project, which includes Shasta Dam, Trinity Dam, Whiskey Town, that whole water collection system was built for agriculture, number one. That was the purpose of holding back that water, was so that the valley would have irrigation. Second was, I believe, flood control. I mean, way down on the list was recreation, but it was built for agriculture, and now it's environmental.
For the fish.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. You know, you see these reservoirs that are full, and you flush them out, and I'm sorry, where are we getting our water to fight fire? Are they going to send these helicopters to fire hydrants in your town?
Yeah.
Well, good luck, because some of our towns don't have water either.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our towns require that. I actually saw a comment online the other day, too, about flood irrigating. Well, they're flood irrigating down in the valley. Hey, you know what? You should do some reading, because flood irrigation is actually super efficient in some places and does a tremendous amount to not only use less water, believe it or not, and recharge the groundwater. And keep the water table intact. So, you know, before you pipe off because you think you know what you're talking about, you should actually know what you're talking about and look at some of that. And hopefully you're represented by a member of Congress that is clueless, because you can go help them. Call their staff, find somebody who's interested, and educate them.
Right.
Because until we get other people at the national level who care about this And let's face it, there's not that many of us who represent really heavily forested lands. Right. And kind of we get buried every time.
And we've just kind of fallen into a trap of it's easier to take away people's water rights than it is to conserve our water or properly manage the water and build more water storage.
Well, there was a comment
made. It's
easier
just to take it away from everybody because there isn't enough.
Yeah, and there was a comment made by somebody who will remain nameless who wants to run for governor in this state who had actually asked why people would want to live out in places like that. Our gold rush towns and things that are burning down.
Burning down.
Why would you want to live out there? And it's like, oh, wow. You really don't get it, do you? And I think that's not uncommon. So, anyway, we live in a rural place. Not everyone who listens lives even in this country, and I get that. But these ideas tend to be exported from California. So, please bear in mind it's coming for a place near you. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry, who is done doing whatever it was he was supposed to be doing. I'm sure it was.
I'm sure he's stocking up like a true hoarder.
There you go. Yes.
Getting ready for the apocalypse.
Yeah, because if you look outside our window, it looks like it's already here.
Yeah, I know it.
You are listening to We the People. You can find a lot of this information. We've been doing shows for like 11 years. Please go back into our archives. They are uninterrupted, and they are free to listen to. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Rest assured, you'll get your money's worth. With this show, it has my power at the show.
And we're back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and we have shows with him. Hold on, stretching back to 2017.
Yeah,
he has given us a ton of good information, and for those of you who don't really have time to listen to all of that, there's a ton of information posted, so you can just read it if you'd like, if that's faster. And he is the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Darn it. Bill, your thing got on me.
What?
The one where you can't say stuff. Both are congressional advisory boards. There, got that. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. He has a PhD in history and archaeology, and another PhD in strategic studies, because I guess two is better than one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we've decided. We've decided two is better than one, so we're happy he has them. And that was what led him to the CIA. He's the author of numerous books, including The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020, Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, and Electric Armageddon. And he's working on a new one, but I'm not going to spoiler alert that. However, when it comes out, we'll have him come on and talk about it, if not before. So, Dr. Pry, how was the grocery store? Sorry, we didn't actually circle up ahead of time on the whole time thing. I realize you talked to other people besides us. That whole East Coast, West Coast thing, it's always a conundrum. So where would you like to start today? Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We forced him back into the cone of silence.
Yes, we did. Apparently, the grocery store, there was quite a story there. We just weren't hearing it.
Apparently, there was more to it than that. Huh. Well, you know, it's always the beginning that's the hard part.
Is he back?
No. Hey, Travis, why don't you try calling him one more time? And we will continue tap dancing. Let's see. Well, actually, we don't have to tap dance because what I'd really like to tell you, and I just didn't want to do it all at the beginning, but I will now. He has an article out in The Hill this week. He called it How to Make an American Hiroshima. I believe The Hill changed the topic. What are you telling me? I broke something?
Yeah.
Oh. The article?
Yeah, the one I left in the
car. You want me to hand it to you?
Yeah, could you hand it to me?
Because I have it printed on paper?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thanks for highlighting it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, he has a terrific article, and I have posted that there. I think it comes out tomorrow, and along with the link to it. But Dr. Pry goes into a lot of different things, but always, always, always on the national security side, with our power grid. He's just worked on that for years and years and years and tried desperately to get our federal government to fully jump on board with that. Okay, how about we try this again? Uh-oh.
Dr. Pry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you are.
There
good.
He is.
Yeah, we lost you there. I don't know what happened.
I am so sorry that I left you guys in the lurch.
I
forgot that you started at my time. I'm on the East Coast. That you started at 3:00, and I thought it was at 3:30.
No worries.
And and you, as a married woman, you know, understand that where the lines of authority are, right? You know, so that when you tell your husband to go to the grocery store, he has to do it.
I'm not sure. I like really, what you're implying there.
But that's really no excuse. I would have defied that command from the commander-in-chief had I remembered that we started at 3. But anyway, here I am. You're probably the proud. You guys are so entertaining anyway, just by yourselves. I'm sure the first part of the show was better than anything you're going to hear.
I don't know.
I
was ranting about illegal marijuana and water. And the fires. So,
right.
Wasn't maybe as entertaining as it could have been. I've got better material. How's that?
Yeah. Well, you know, so here we are. We could talk about anything you like, but since this show is sandwiched between the 76th anniversary of Hiroshima, which happened on Friday, and tomorrow is Nagasaki Day, on August 9th. So maybe we should take, we could at least start off sort of doing a retrospective on, you know, where we are in terms of nuclear deterrence. A lot of people do that. Here we are, 76 years of living into the technological revolution of nuclear weapons and under the terror of the mushroom cloud. And how are we doing? And I would say that we're actually not doing well, not doing well at all. And the signs of deterrence failure are just everywhere. It's extremely disturbing. Period we're living through here. If you go back to just earlier in this year, April, May, you know, we had that big Russian so-called mobile exercise, which was really a mobilization, maybe not just an exercise. And it so terrified the Biden White House and NATO, though reportedly we put our forces on DEFCON 3 because they thought that Russia was getting ready to finally invade Ukraine and just finish that and possibly go as far as invading the frontline NATO states. Our own war games show that Russia can overrun the Ukraine and the frontline NATO states in 72 hours, and we can't stop them. Biden, no doubt, was casting his mind back, Biden and his team, to the Obama administration when Russia seized Crimea and started this long war in Ukraine, and there was nothing we could do about that. So that's the kind of thing that wouldn't have happened during the Cold War, when we had nuclear parity, when we were extremely conscientious about maintaining the nuclear balance to make sure that potential adversaries could gain no advantage over us in the numbers of nuclear weapons or in their technological sophistication. You know, both of the superpowers were very cautious back in those days. You know, that's why we didn't have wars in the Middle East, you know, around the periphery of Russia, for example, because we were afraid of how they would interpret that. And likewise, the Russians, Soviets at the time, you know, showed restraint too, you know, because they were concerned about our nuclear deterrent. In fact, it prevented them from invading and taking over European NATO all through the Cold War, even though they had an enormous advantage in conventional firepower on the ground and could have done it if the war was just limited to a conventional war. But here we are, you know, starting off the year with a close call in terms of the possible invasion of Ukraine and then frontline NATO states, and then this series of escalating cyber attacks from Russia, in the aftermath of that Ukraine crisis, we had actually talked about this on an earlier show where a Russian spokesman said, you know, if there's a war, it's going to be a cyber war, and we will win it. And they gave examples of the kinds of things they could do. They could turn off the lights in New York City. They could shut down the electric grid in Florida, or they could black out the whole United States, and they could win a cyber war against us. And then, not long after that, you know, we had the Colonial Pipeline, Russian hack, shutting down this pipeline to provide half the petroleum, not just to the civilian consumers in the eastern half of the United States, but to our military bases on the east coast of the United States. This is where we would project power to protect Ukraine if we wanted to do that, or to protect our NATO allies to whom we have security obligations by treaty. And we wouldn't be able to do that with the Colonial Pipeline shut down. And that's just one small part of our infrastructures. And after that, there's been a subsequent series of escalating attacks. Even after the Putin-Biden summit in Geneva, you know, President Biden and dictator Putin met in Geneva, Switzerland, to have a discussion about cyber issues and nuclear issues, national security issues, and it was one of these come-by-out moments. Biden came back very proudly with a statement co-signed with Putin that said, a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought. You know, sort of a hallelujah moment for the anti-nuclear left. You know, we're supposed to take that seriously. And to my mind, that's the equivalent of Neville Chamberlain's 1938 Peace for Our Time moment. You know, when he came back from his summit with Adolf Hitler in Czechoslovakia, you know, saying, it's peace for our time because Hitler's promised he's not going to attack any more territories or engage in any more expansion. And then, of course, the very next year, World War II broke out because Hitler broke his word and invaded Poland. And Hitler and Chamberlain were not like-minded about the idea that a World War II could not be won and that a World War II should never be fought. It was entirely Hitler's intention to fight and win a World War II, just as it is Putin and Russia's obvious intention to be able to fight and win a nuclear World War III. You know, this is manifested by their massive nuclear weapons buildup. If they believe the nuclear war should never be fought and could not be won, then they would not be going to the extraordinary efforts they are with their relatively small economy, you know, to be the world's predominant superpower in terms of nuclear weapons and advanced nuclear weapons technologies, many of which we've described in past shows, and their military exercises that portray them winning nuclear World War III's over us. And the preparation, you know, to protect their people and their political military leadership with thousands of anti-missile systems and deep underground shelters that can accommodate hundreds of thousands of their political military leaders. We have nothing parallel to that, nor do we have the massive civil defense program for the general population that the Russians had. So you have to judge them how they act, not what they say and sign to naive Western political leaders like Joe Biden. You know, when they act as if a nuclear war is going to be fought and can be won. And the same is true of China as well. There, too, the, you know, signs of deterrence unraveling are pretty pretty disturbing. You know, we are, there's a great debate on going on in Washington now about not if China is going to invade Taiwan, but when and how soon. Is it going to be tomorrow? Is it going to be a few years from now? Is it going to be a decade from now? But most everybody, you know, even the doves seem to acknowledge that China is probably going to invade Taiwan at some point to try to take it over. And one of the things that got a little bit into the press, but there was so much more in it that hasn't been described to the American people, and I'll talk about this, is just recently, you know, within the past month, when the White House and the Pentagon were saying, trying to put China on notice that, you know, we don't want them to invade Taiwan, that we would defend Taiwan, you know, from an invasion, that the differences between China and Taiwan should be resolved peacefully. Japan did exactly what it's supposed to do as a good ally and said, and this is a bold thing for them to do given the circumstances, you know, it said that if the United States comes to defense of Taiwan, Japan will join us. Japan will participate in the defense of Taiwan because it is in Japan, not only in Japan's strategic interests, but that is their obligation as a strategic partner of the United States. And, you know, when they said that, I almost cheered inside, you know. So rarely do our allies stand up like that and be counted with us, you know. And that was a hard thing for Japan because their defense and foreign policy has tended to be kind of isolationist, you know. Theoretically, they're our ally, but they've been, successive Japanese governments have been very reluctant to talk about projecting force beyond Japan's borders. And most of their defense investment is just protect Japan and its territories. So this is one of the few times, it may be the first time, that Japan has been bold enough to step forward and be counted and say, yeah, we're going to help the United States defend a country that's not our own. We're going to help them defend Taiwan. Well, Japan's reward for this from China is that there is a TV channel or a website, you know, supposedly an unofficial channel. But there's no such thing as an unofficial channel in communist China.
No.
And it's run by some Chinese general, and it's got an affiliation with the People's Liberation Army. But it's supposed to be unofficial, okay? And they came out with, and they went ballistic on Japan and threatened to do a nuclear first strike on Japan. In past shows, we've talked about the China's so-called no first use pledge, where China, you know, has pledged that they will never be the first ones to use nuclear weapons. Well, wow, what happened to the no first use pledge? Suddenly they're threatening that they would use nuclear weapons first. They would make a nuclear first strike on Japan if Japan sent even one soldier to Taiwan, or one airplane to Taiwan, or one ship, and that China's response would be to nuke Japan first and continuously until they surrendered, and they would have an ignominious surrender. They would be crushed even worse than in World War II. And they, now, some of that was reported. The first strike has been reported in Western press, but a lot of the rest of it hasn't been. And I think it's because it causes such cognitive dissonance, because what was said is so contrary to what a lot of the mainstream Washington thinking about China is. Some of the, in addition to threatening to first strike against Taiwan, they also said that they would be joined in making a first strike, excuse me, against Japan. They would be joined in making a first strike against Japan by Russia and North Korea, which is arguably just as important as the threat of the first strike itself. Because here they are, you know, a People's Liberation Army affiliated channel saying that if there's a nuclear war, Russia and North Korea are going to be on our side. And
so obviously they're all chatting about this, which ought to make everybody feel great. Dr. Pryor, exactly. We have to take a really swift break here. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Okay, I'll let it go. I just had to tease you one little bit there.
Nice.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Nice job, Bill.
Hey, you got it. Thanks. No problem.
Should always find you gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
There we go. So, Dr. Pryor, where do you see these guys going with this? I mean, how much of this is the typical bluster, and how much of it is, you know, those guys in the U.S. seem to be, you know, solidly on the ship of fools. I think we can roll them this time.
Oh, I don't think any of it is bluster. You know, I always wonder why in the West, when nuclear threats are expressed by our adversaries, 99% of the time, you know, the liberal mainstream media, in fact, all the media, you know, almost trained to have that reaction. Oh, that's not important. It's just bluster. Don't take them seriously. Barking dogs don't bite, okay? But if a president of the United States were to say similar things, to make such threats, however mild, you know, the press immediately takes that with extreme seriousness and expects everybody to take with extreme seriousness, you know. And it wasn't just because of the Trump administration, but any president, Democrat or Republican, who would make a pronouncement about, hey, you know, under these circumstances, we might use nuclear weapons. You could hear a pin drop in the mainstream media, and that's taken seriously. It's a grave mistake for us to not take very seriously, you know, what our adversaries say. They don't bluster, which to me means, you know, it's just mindless propaganda, that's put out there and it's not serious. Mm. They've thought very deeply before they make any pronouncements along these lines. Continuing with what I was describing, I'd like to, the other things that have basically not been reported that were enunciated on this channel. So that was one of them, you know, this, which I think is incredibly important, this idea that China, Russia, and North Korea would cooperate in nuclear strikes against a U.S. ally. I've been saying that, and a few others have been saying all along that in the new Cold War, you know, we face this new de facto military alliance between China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and international terrorism. And I think that this is another thing that verifies that. You know, and in effect, they're saying, you know, if you fight one of us, you're going to be fighting all of us, including in a nuclear war. And they have exercised together, the Chinese and the Russians. And just this past, in the past few days, there's been another pronouncement, not a news leak, a leak, that the Russian military and Chinese are getting together in Beijing to engage in joint strategic planning. So, this knocks into a cocked hat one of Washington's fondest assumptions, and one of our assumptions that's most that's fundamental to our national security, fundamental to undermining our national security, since it's a myth. And that's the idea that Russia, China, and North Korea don't work together and even can't work together precisely because they're totalitarian states. There's this notion abroad among, you know, liberal intelligentsia in Washington that only democracies can have real alliances. You can't have a real alliance among totalitarian, authoritarian states, you know, because they don't trust each other, because they don't believe in coexistence, and because eventually they'll go to war against each other. And all of that is true. But they can ally against a common enemy, you know, long enough to destroy that common enemy before they turn on each other. And we saw that during World War II, you know, with the Hitler-Stalin Pact and the Tripartite Axis between Germany, Italy, and Japan, which came very close to conquering the world and probably would have if Hitler hadn't, after conquering Western Europe, decided to turn on the Soviet Union. You know, that's really what saved us in World War II. We often talk about winning World War II. We really lost. I mean, it was really that Germany lost World War II because of making that profound strategic mistake and breaking up that alliance. You know, our people in Washington have got to get it through our heads that there isn't any China card for us to play against North Korea or Russia. These guys are closer to each other and are working together, and even have military plans against us, and that if we and our military needs to get out of its head, that it can fight a war like just against one of them, like against Russia or North Korea. All of them, you know, are going to come in against us, you know, in a conflict. Now, moving on with, you know, the other point, very important couple points that this made that did not find its way into the Western press is the statement also talked about what would they do after they nuked Japan into submission with a nuclear first strike, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans. They would they have a plan to divide up the Japanese home island, so Japan would be broken up into four different countries. And they've got a what they call a peace constitution for each of those four countries. And those four countries would then be occupied by Russia and China, military troops, boots on the ground, to administer these countries, which hardly can be called countries if they're occupied by foreign powers like Russia and China and are being administered by them. So this is a pretty sophisticated vision and a pretty well-developed vision of what to do with one of our allies. And it makes me think, in fact, I think it is obvious, that they have probably thought through, not just for Japan, but for all of our allies, and for the United States itself, a new world order, and very much how it would look. And there's probably peace constitutions in their drawers for the eastern half of the United States and the western half of the United States after they break us up into different countries. It's very much along the lines of the way the Japanese during World War II, when Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany were cooperating, and they had a vision of the future, for example, that would divide the United States down the Mississippi River, and Nazi Germany would get the eastern half, and Imperial Japan would get the western half. So this is very serious. This is where you have nuclear armed superpowers. I know it sounds like a fantasy here, but this is how deeply they've been thinking about these sorts of things. And not just words, but now we know, I can't recall if we've talked about this on the show, because it's been such a recent development, you know, over this past month and a half, the discovery of these 250 ICBM silos that are building in the desert by China, and they're probably for their DF-41 ICBM. This is enormously important and consequential in terms of an actual nuclear threat. You know, just in January or February, the Pentagon, when they gave their worldwide threat briefing to Congress, they didn't say anything about these silos. You know, they lowballed again. They actually lowered their estimate of the number of nuclear weapons China has from down to 200. Even the anti-nuclear left-wing Union of Concerned Scientists criticized the Pentagon for underestimating the Chinese nuclear threat. Even USCIS had a higher estimate of the number of weapons, which was 350. And the Pentagon used to estimate it was something like 350 as well. And, you know, and I think that this is another sign of the politicization of intelligence with the incoming Biden administration. Now we've got Joe Biden in as president. Suddenly the Chinese nuclear threat, you know, is being ratcheted back. And Congress is not told, assuming that the Pentagon saw the silos. I can't believe they didn't see them. You know, they cover hundreds of square miles. So they must have seen them. The reason we know about them is because independent academics were looking at commercial satellite photography, and they found the silos, and they broke the story to the press. And then the Pentagon last week confirmed, yes, they are ICBM silos. Why didn't they tell Congress back in January and February? I mean, or did they actually miss them? Are we that incompetent? I can't believe that incompetent. I think they kept the news from the American people. Hopefully they briefed Congress in private, but nobody leaked from Congress, so I don't even think they told Congress about the silos. These 250 silos, you know, if they're going to be for the DF-41 ICBM, which seems it's clear that they are, the DF-41 carries 10 highly accurate weapons, 10 highly accurate nuclear warheads. It's the first strike weapon. One warhead from a DF-41 can take out a Minuteman silo. Well, they only have 400 Minuteman silos. When these silos are completed, you know, in 2 or 3 years, this will give them 2,500 additional highly accurate first strike weapons, 2,500 of them. The entire, just on the DF-41, just in those silos. Overall, they'll probably have 3,000 or more nuclear weapons in their inventory in 2 to 3 years. You know, the United States only has 1,400 warheads in its whole nuclear deterrent, in its whole strategic nuclear deterrent on all of our missiles and all of our bombers, you know, right now. That's more than twice as many nuclear weapons as the United States has. So I know I have talked in the show in the past about how, you know, our intelligence community, you know, has really been incompetent when it comes to China, estimating the nuclear threat from China. And that there's all kinds of reasons to think that the number that we have been estimating the nuclear threat from China is being far too low. And now it's just amazing here in Washington and the inside of the Beltway to see these people turning themselves into pretzels to try to bend over backwards to rationalize, you know, how either the Chinese aren't going to deploy to explain away these silos, that it's not that big of a threat, or to try to justify their lowballing the threat, to reconcile it with saying they've got 200 warheads today, but in a few years they're gonna increase that number to 3,000. You know, the intellectual gymnastics that are going on. To give one example, and again, I can't remember if we talked about this on a previous show or if we even discussed this topic, but one of the absurd arguments that's being made was floated by a guy named Jeffrey Lewis, political scientist. He's the mainstream liberal media's favorite so-called nuclear expert. He doesn't know anything about nuclear weapons or missiles. He's a political scientist, but he's a university academic, and they all because hey, they always
Dr. Pry. Before I don't want to get cut off in the middle of that, and we're into 20 seconds or so before we've got a break for the news at the top of the hour. But since we've wrested you away from your chores, we have you hostage for another hour. So we'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, I chew, they make it right. I hope they never sleep at night. They better make some changes and do it soon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Huh. Did you know that?
Huh.
Yeah.
I heard rumors.
Yeah, they are.
I've driven by. I saw their sign. It's lit up way late into the night.
Oh, yeah. Lights up the
LED
sky.
LED, so they're not burning a bunch of electricity.
That's right. Very, very energy conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get pretty much anything you want. John Deere, tractors, implements, parts sales service. They're also a Honda generator dealer. A little bit short on generators. You may have waited too long to pick up a generator if you need one this year. There's still a few in stock, but California is experiencing a generator shortage. I think you can get some off-brand still, but if you need a generator, you better jump on it. Also, they're a steel power products dealer. You can get all your chainsaws and trimmers and whackers and all that good stuff. Go by and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Oh, that could have been my chance.
Yeah, it could have been.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to start horning in on that.
Well, we'll try that next time, see if you pick up on it.
See if you can handle the pressure of staring at me with the silence.
Yeah.
And willing me to speak.
Yeah, that's not my forte.
The silence or staring.
Either.
Yeah, okay. Good safe answer. Oh, my goodness. So, you know, we try to always bring you guys the kind of the rest of the story. We're not big on the let's interview a whole bunch of people or just, you know, wing it ourselves and tell you what we think, because we know you mostly don't care what we think. We had to do that a little bit at the beginning, but that's because Dr. Pry made us. So, you know, send all the hate mail to him. You know, we do like having people who are experts in their field so that you can hear more from them. And for the life of me, I don't know why the mainstream media has gone to this, you know, 1.5 minute explanation model. It's just so sad. Yeah. Nobody learns anything.
Nope.
And
And then it's taken as the gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just makes people dumber. It's just pathetic. Anyway, so we do like bringing you great people who have really a good track record and a lot of information behind them. And Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is one of our favorites. We have all of his shows linked, actually, on today, August 8th, 2021. You can go there and look down through the list of programs under his name. I brought the book list over to this page, too. So he has The Power and the Light, Blackout Wars, The Manhattan Project, Civil Military Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. His books are all comedies, by the way. War Scare. Okay, no, they're not. But you could read them with an accent and make them slightly more fun, although it's information we've got to have, so not everything is, you know, happy talk. The Biden administration will give you happy talk, but we all know that's not real. And then the last one I have listed here is Poseidon, Russia's New Doomsday Machine. So, Dr. Pry, do you want to tell people what your next book is, or do we do that at the end? Your call.
Oh, we can talk about that now if you like.
I want to talk about that guy we broke off with, but so however you want to do it.
Sure. Well, let me just finish my thought about this Jeffrey Lewis character.
Okay.
That is that the mainstream media is always quoting him as if he's an expert when he's not. He's an academic political scientist who pretends that he's an expert, basically, you know, and he has an august-sounding position. You know, he's the director of non-proliferation East Asia Studies at the Middlebury Institute. You know, so, I mean, you know, that's like some guy at a community college giving himself an august title like that, you know, who has never worked in the intelligence community or Defense Department and has no professional training, you know, in these areas. You know, but that's enough. You know, the media has gotten itself has so little expertise that it's a matter of the blind leading the blind. And he says what they want to hear. You know, he basically tries to uphold the common wisdom that's out there among liberals. And in this case, of the 250 new ICBM silos that China is building, Lewis has gone out there and gotten almost all the press, you know, to say, well, maybe we don't have to worry about it. Because maybe even though they're building 250 silos, they're only going to deploy something like 12 ICBMs in the 250 silos.
Yeah.
And so he came up with this theory, it's called the shell game theory, that because back in the Reagan administration, we thought about a deployment mode for our Peacekeeper ICBM. It was called they called it a shell game, but it wasn't based on silos. It was based on above ground hardened shelters, and there was a roadway, and the Peacekeeper would be mounted on a mobile tractor, and it would be moved around at night, you know, to hide in a different shelter. But Lewis is not deterred from raising this as an explanation, even though we never deployed that system because it was too expensive. People didn't think it would work. We didn't even keep the Peacekeeper around that long. In the end, we did deploy the Peacekeeper in silos, but we didn't try playing a shell game. Every silo got a Peacekeeper missile. So if the Chinese are really going to do what we did with the Peacekeeper, every one of those silos is going to have an ICBM in it. It also just doesn't make sense because it's really hard. You know, these missiles weigh a lot. You know, you're talking about a missile that weighs 75 tons or something like that. You know, you cannot quickly and easily, you know, move something like that from one silo to another, try to fool people. It's going to be seen on satellite. So the whole theory makes no sense, but the idiots in the press just swallow a trunk line and sinker because it gives them hope that, oh, maybe China isn't going to, you know, far surpass us in nuclear weapons. And you know, they're afraid of what the hawks, so-called hawks, the Pentagon are going to do. You know, to use that to justify our own extremely modest modernization program, you know, which isn't really a modernization program at all. It's really a matter of recycling our old nuclear weapons. All of this reminds me, you know, if you want to know about the time that we're living in now, you know, people, there's a Winston Churchill's first book in his series on the history of World War II, was called The Gathering Storm. The Gathering Storm. If you want to know what our own times are, go read The Gathering Storm, because it parallels our own times just perfectly. You know, Churchill was explaining how we got into World War II. What were the Western democracies like before World War II happened? And we today are very much like what the Western democracies were in the 1930s. You know, we're extremely critical of our own civilization. We've sort of lost confidence in our own civilization. No, I won't say sort of. We have lost confidence. You know, in the 1930s, the elites and the journalists and the academics, basically were blaming the Western democracies for World War I because they were capitalist and imperialist, and we weren't, we didn't appreciate the aspirations of Germany and the Austro-Hungarian Empire, that they had legitimate interests. We weren't sensitive enough to those. And the merchants of death, because we were capitalists, it was our industrial evil geniuses in the military-industrial complex that caused World War I. It was kind of an international conspiracy. None of that is true, but these are fantasies that were sort of concocted, you know, by academics and elites to explain what happened in World War I. Because of the Great Depression that came after World War I, people had lost faith in the ability of free economic and even free political institutions to work. You know, before the war happened, you know, a lot of elites and journalists and academics were in love with communism, you know, and some of them were in love with fascism and national socialism. They looked at these totalitarian systems and said, well, at least they make the trains run on time. And their people seem to have something that we've lost. You know, they seem to have believe in their systems, and there's great enthusiasm to the point of fanaticism, you know, about supporting the future of their society. They deluded themselves and couldn't see that these were all military dictatorships that were bent on conquest and revenge. And They broke all the treaties at the time, you know, the naval treaties. Germany wasn't even supposed to have an air force. Winston Churchill was constantly warning them about the Nazi buildup of military forces. And just like today, you know, the elites would come up with, that bend over backwards to explain away why Imperial Japan and Nazi Germany were breaking the treaties and engaging in all kinds of acts of aggression. You know, Japan had invaded China. You know, Germany took off over Austria, and then the Czech Republic walked into the Rhineland before all of that, you know, was engaged in acts of aggression. Italy was fighting a war in Abyssinia and had colonies in North Africa, you know, and all of that was explained away. You know, they came up with reasons. Oh, they, you know, we need to appease them. We need to appease them because they're doing this for their domestic audience. It's bluster. It's bluster, to use a phrase, you know, on their part, and they're not threatening us. They're trying to raise patriotism and overcome the shame of the past to their own people. So we need to appease them and go along and get along and everything will be fine. And that's pretty much the way Washington and a lot of our elites are thinking today about these actions that have come out of Russia and China and North Korea and even Iran. I mean, here we are, talk about, you know, again, unrealism, living in a fantasy world. You know, Benny Gantz, who's the new defense minister of Israel last week, said that he estimates that Iran is only 10 weeks away from an atomic bomb. And the Biden administration reaction is, well, we need to revive the Iran nuclear deal. That's the solution. We need to push harder to get the Iran nuclear deal back. You know, just an unreality, you know. And the way we saw this movie before in the 1930s, and you asked me, where is all this going? Well, if history repeats itself, where all this is going is to World War III. You know, that's what happened in the 30s, and except they didn't have nuclear weapons in the 30s. And the ability to achieve the defeat of the United States and of the Western democracies would be a lot easier for these countries today because weapons of mass destruction like nuclear weapons, like EMP, like cyber warfare, gives these adversaries tremendous asymmetrical advantages over us. You know, we're much more terrified of these weapons than they are because we are democracies and we value human life, the lives of our people, much more highly than they do. You know, the totalitarian elites of these countries are willing to sacrifice tens of millions of their people to achieve whatever goal they have in mind. And, but where it could be going, is, another way the movie could play out, you know, is we can lose World War III and not even know it without actually having it as a shooting war. And that is what they intend. You know, Sun Tzu's first dictum is the greatest victory is to win without war. And that's what you can do with nuclear weapons. That's what makes them strategic weapons. We have talked about this before on your show, where it's a chess game. It's not a checkers game. You know, we can anticipate, well, this is what they can do with 250 DF-41 ICBMs. You know, we know they could do a successful first strike against us. So knowing that, do we dare go to the defense of Taiwan? You know, if they invade Taiwan, maybe we won't. Maybe we will do things even before that happens to pull our horns in and to appease them so that we won't be in their crosshairs. Like, for example, one of the things I think we did talk about, how we moved that B-52 bomber away. The most important chess piece we had on the Pacific was a B-52 bomber wing in Guam. And we pulled that out and moved it back to North Dakota. What kind of a signal does that send to our allies, right? And what kind of a signal does that send to our adversaries? To them, that's a victory without having to fight war. Another thing I would add about these threats against Japan, by the way, is first, in terms of the threat that North Korea, Russia, and China will jointly make nuclear strikes on Japan. You know, North Korea and Russia didn't say anything to contradict that. They didn't come out and say, oh, they're wrong, this is just an unofficial website, and we're not going to attack Japan. They didn't say anything like that. They were silent about it. So I think that silence is assent. And the other person that was silent, and this is the silence that's far more more dangerous is we were silent. You know, the President of the United States, Washington, Secretary of Defense, they didn't say anything about these threats against Japan. What a reward to our Japanese ally that is brave enough to come out and say, America, if you go to the defense of Taiwan, we are with you. We're going to be a good ally, and we're going to help you defend Taiwan. Then China says, we're going to nuke you and destroy your country and divide you up so you won't even exist as a country anymore. And we don't say anything. What kind of a message is that? This is
exactly.
Winning without war. This is winning without war.
Mm-hmm.
And it can slip away from us. You know, we can find ourselves in a new world order without a war ever having been fought, just by successive blunders and neglecting the credibility of our alliance system and neglecting the credibility of our own forces.
God, that's almost like that. It's terrible, but you're making me think of that Far Side cartoon, you know, where the big finger comes, you know, the hand, all you see is the hand. It's supposed to be God. And it says, you know, I don't know what his name is. Henry destroys the world, you know, because he pulls the finger.
Like,
I'm going to find that and I'm going to post it. We need to take a really quick break here. And so in honor of the fact that we have seen this movie, too, it looks like Elton John actually wrote a song about it. So we thought we'd just play a little bit of that so you can hum a few bars while you think about the nuclear mess that befalls us if we don't pay attention.
Yep.
History is a wonderful tool. We should use it more. You were listening to We the People.
I'd rather rewrite it.
No, I thought you were going to deny it. Oh, wait. No, that's our chat room.
Oh, no, no. Ouch.
I know. So you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I can see by your eyes you must be lying. When you think I don't have a clue, baby, you're crazy. If you think that you can fool me, because I've seen that movie too. From the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
Your eyes have a mist from the smoke of a distant fire.
That's everywhere in Northern California.
Yep.
Where our forests have gone unmanaged and
yep.
We've allowed
you
the...
You too could have red eyes. Just come to Northern California.
Yep. The destruction of our timber and mining industries and all of those things have led to all of this. And if you still think it's climate change, you know, I'm not going to say it, but I read somewhere that might make you an idiot. So, you know, you probably ought to have that checked.
I read that on the internet, so it's true.
That totally makes it true.
Yeah.
So anyway, just thinking about all of our communities out there who are suffering needlessly and could have been, you know, could have been doing well, could have been, making money, utilizing all these trees as a resource. But instead, you know, we're watching it all come raining out of the sky in tiny particles, which makes no sense. And so now all of these people who live in these towns that have been there since the gold rush are,
gone. They won't get rebuilt either. There just isn't the money or the desire.
We have a town with 1,000 people. Yeah. I mean, this isn't just so people understand. You know, it's like, well, FEMA will come in and solve everything. Just a little FYI, the FEMA calculation depends on the wealth of your state. So it doesn't. If you can burn down an entire town, and that doesn't mean FEMA's coming in. It's it's a mathematical calculation. So if you lived in a really poor state, many of whom you could name. If you lived in a really poor state, that calculation is a lot easier. The threshold is easier to reach for loss. But when you lose little towns that are small, 1,000 people or less.
And your state has billions of dollars in surplus, apparently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You're not getting...
You're not getting FEMA.
The calculation doesn't come out. So don't... if you're kind of watching Northern California, you're thinking, oh, well, they'll all be able to rebuild. They'll get, you know, tax money or whatever. No, not really. that just means it's a destroyed place. And I'm sorry if you never got to go there. I guess they're burning down. Now it's burning down a place where I used to backpack all the time in college. Beautiful place. Out by Junction City in Trinity County. So it's just everywhere you look. And people are, I mean, here you have folks living with other people in their camp trailer in some other town down the road, and they're wondering, did my house burn down or not? So,
yeah, I have a family member right now that's been evacuated, been living in a motorhome for about 5 days.
And the people who don't have a motorhome are living in their car, or somebody's
car,
in a friend's driveway or whatever.
A tent out on some flat somewhere.
Get this. I was talking to one guy. He evacuated with his animals, you know, just dogs and things, you know, thank goodness didn't have large animals to evacuate. But they parked on he's a log truck driver and parked on a kind of side road that nobody is going to use. It's all overgrown. And they used to use it as a logging road. And, the Forest Service came and chased him off of there because he was in a day use area. You couldn't camp overnight. Yeah. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. They were sleeping because they had fled the fire. And I'm thinking, well, that was a good use of that.
Mm-hmm.
They
have the authority to do that, though.
Exactly.
So they flex their muscle.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And so then you have other people who have cattle who are out on rangeland that are actually keeping the fires low, eating up all that grass and whatnot. And they're out there trying to find their cattle. Before they get burned up in the fire. So just, I don't know, if you're having a great day and you can see blue sky overhead and all that, just, you know, say a prayer for some of these people, because it's hell.
It is.
It is hell, and it's not over anytime soon.
It's far from over. That fire has gone. Well, I'm talking about the Dixie Fire up in Plumas. What is it? Plumas, Lassen.
It's all over the place.
It's all over. It's 400 plus 1,000 acres right now, which is, I think, in the top 10, if not one of the largest fires in California.
I think they said it was third. I'm going to put it just as a little aside here while we're on this little trail. It's August 8th, 2021. I'm going to put a link on our site for today for you. It's a really good link to a NASA and U.S. Forest Service site that where you can track what's happening with the fire. It'll give you a lot of data, probably more than you want, but you can look at the map in real time and you can see what's burning currently, what's burned previous. You can zoom in. You can't quite get to the granular street level, but the larger roads for sure. You can see the highways and different things that are going on. And so if you're having trouble getting information, that's a good spot where you can get that information yourself rather than wait or read it on. Actually, Facebook has been fairly, I was going to make a joke and say, or you can wait for Facebook, but that actually has been a fairly decent, credible source of information. So anyway, we're thinking about all you guys in the fire out there, and you've got your hands full. All right. Back to the wider fire of our lack of, I don't know, paying attention as a country. Dr. Pry, what do you think would wake these guys up on this? Or do you think they're just going to deny it until the bitter end? What's your sense of it at this point?
You know, I keep trying to wake them up, as do a lot of my colleagues who have been in the national security field, longer than I have. Senior people in the Reagan administration, we've just gone through sort of a civilizational change, I think. Unless we can throw the bums out at some point in the future, I don't think anything is going to turn it around. That's one of the reasons why Trump's defeat, as it was, I think, for many Americans, because he was an anti-establishment guy. But he didn't seem to understand that he really did need to drain the swamp. I mean, that should have been more than just a campaign word. He really did need to do that. That should have been job number one. As long as the swamp is in charge, we're heading toward catastrophe. And I don't see a Winston Churchill at the end of our tunnel. Looking about the personalities, who might take over, who could be the person that would step in and save Western civilization. I don't see Winston Churchill around these days. maybe one will emerge, you know. Talking about your fire, and this might seem a stretch to you, okay, but in terms of what you and your people are experiencing right there, I think that it's part. I think you guys are sort of on the front line of this World War III without bullets, all right? This chess game that's being played between civilizations. Because one of the weapons that you're dealing with when you're dealing with totalitarian powers is ideas as a weapon. And we have, unfortunately, increasingly embraced the idea of socialism. And California is on the cutting edge of that among all of the 50 states. That's the way Russia and China and North Korea work, except they're obviously even more totalitarian than California is. And one of the consequences you get when you have big government, you know, and big agencies, is the little guy gets ignored because everything is centralized. And that's just for a big, gigantic, centralized government. Sacrificing the interests of the little guy, quote unquote, is just the cost price of doing business. You know, it's the price of them accumulating political power to themselves. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and change the way government worked in California so that it worked a lot more the way it was supposed to work in the Constitution, so that the power was in the hands of local government to make most of the decisions, and then the state government would be less powerful and the least powerful would be the federal government, which is how it's supposed to work under the Constitution, I don't think you'd be having the problems you have, you know, because those local governments and communities and industries have to live there and would be more sensitive to things going wrong and would manage the environment better. That's the way it's supposed to work. But the fact that it doesn't work that way, the fact that we've been losing the ideological war to socialism, to centralized government, is why you're in the situation you're in. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that right there in your neighborhood, you are on the front line of this World War III that, pray God, it doesn't turn eventually into a nuclear or a conventional war. But I also hope we don't lose it without a fight, because that seems to be the way things are going, you know, where they will be able to achieve the greatest victory, as described by Sun Tzu, and achieve that victory without even having to fight war.
Sure, because I mean, you look at these guys that basically deny reality, and they want to take out all of our dams out here. Well, I'm sorry, but where's the water coming from to fight the fires? If you don't have the reservoirs, and without the dams, you had tons of flooding. They also want to take them out with no consideration. They don't want to remove them; they just want to blow them and let them go. I'm sorry. Where in the universe can you put concrete, which is incredibly toxic, where can you just let that go in a river, and then you're going to let millions of cubic yards of sediment just somehow go 160 miles to the ocean? That's not going to happen. It denies reality, and people think, oh, we're going to have pristine rivers with so many more fish and all this stuff, and it's like, I don't know. I got nothing nice to say.
You know, that's one of the symptoms of totalitarian systems, is the big lie, operating in a fantasy world against which you can't defend, you know, certain politically, like climate change, you know, is an example of the big lie. I mean, it isn't based on science. It isn't true that, you know, that there's some kind of a consensus among climatologists that climate change, catastrophic climate change, is happening, you know, but it's used as a justification for all kinds of power grabbing and counterproductive policies that hurt the people, that hurt the little guy, that hurt the working people, you know, restrict their opportunities and freedom. I mean, another one is the idea that we're institutionally racist. All right,
yeah.
You know, this is on the par with, you know, the idea that there's an international Jewish conspiracy out there, or that class warfare, Marx's model of that the classes are perpetually at war, and there has to be a revolution of the proletariat, you know, to destroy and overthrow, you know, the other classes, and then you'll arrive at some kind of socialist workers' paradise. You know, that's what motivates people. It provides simplistic, not just simple, but simplistic answers that are, you know, untrue answers. They're basically lies, you know, that are told to garner power to the political class that wants to be, have all power in their hands, the totalitarian power in their hands. And that's why, you know, these systems, they can go on for a long time, you know, but eventually they end up self-destructing from their own internal contradictions, you know, because you can't make a system work on a lie. You know, if it's untrue, if your beliefs are fundamentally at variance with reality, eventually reality catches up with you and you end up collapsing. I mean, that's what happened to the Soviet Union, you know, and had Nazi Germany managed to conquer the world, it probably would have collapsed of its own internal contradictions, or, you know, the totalitarian powers, Imperial Japan and Italy, would have gone to war with each other and destroyed each other. So I'm not saying that in the long run we should hope for that. I would like to get our constitutional republic back and avoid having to go through a new dark ages in order for reality to come out with, you know, a civilization that is at a 18th or 19th or 17th century level of technology, you know, so that we can start with the Declaration of Independence all over again and the Constitution all over again. It would be nice to not lose 200 years of human progress. But right now, things are looking pretty bleak.
It's just, yeah, what do you say after a while? I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating for all of the people who have tried for all these years like you have. How long have you been working on this stuff, just ballpark?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I started in the CIA in 1985, but I'd been studying it for long before that, 20 years before that. So, you know, 30, 40 years, you know, I've spent a whole professional lifetime, you know, working in this area. And I, you know, and even I've been taken by surprise, as have my colleagues, that the threat from within, you know, the crisis that was foreseen by founders, you know, I didn't think we'd get there in our lifetime. So a lot of conservatives have been predicting it. I've been predicting it in a long time, but I shouldn't have been surprised, because it doesn't, constitutional republics, you know, it's hard work to be a free people, you know, you know, all the signs were there to have so much power concentrated in Washington, to have so much power concentrated in these government bureaucracies and agencies, which like to think of themselves as the best and brightest, that they're the technocrats who know all the better. But when you actually meet these people and have to work with them, as I have,
oh, for God's sake, don't
really
even get me started.
You know,
I'm still trying to. I'm still trying to get a written answer from the FCC on a rule that's right in their rule book. All I wanted them to do is confirm an application of their rule, which basically is their rule, stated with a human overlay, you know, hey, if this happens, that rule applies, right? This has been going on for months, absolutely months, and I can't get a straight answer from them. It's like,
don't have to be afraid, because they can't get fired.
Yeah.
And they're getting paid enormous amounts of money to not do their job.
And so, of course, you know, people are like, well, why can't you get an answer from them? I'm like, mm-hmm.
Because who are you?
Yeah.
You're just a member of the public. You're just the people, you know? They're the new aristocracy.
Exactly.
You know, they don't feel they have to answer to us anymore. You know, they don't see us as their boss, which is the way the people are supposed to be viewed. We are like subjects.
Yeah.
We're subjects, you know? And we're lucky that they don't take retaliatory action against us for speaking up and making their life uncomfortable.
Come out and crush us like the bugs that we are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, their new form of raid, I guess, is spreading money all over the world and making sure people don't go back to work. And you look at all that stuff and you think, this doesn't end anywhere.
Well, we're paying for it. We're starting to pay for it right now. We haven't paid for a fraction of it.
No, it has not come home to roost.
No, look at the inflation.
So I think this break we will celebrate the crazy and give you a couple of musical highlights to the insanity, just in case you didn't have anything to hum along with as you were frustrated. You're listening to We the People. And you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
When someone says, "Why you're a part of Crack-A-Punk's palace, do what the rest don't do. Don't face the fact that Crack-A-Punk's palace may have no other choice than to deport you."
Analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, when out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
Yeah, so if that song has been playing in the back of your mind, we know who you are. That's my favorite Crazy Person song, actually.
Yeah.
I had several to choose from, but that is my hands-down favorite. I figure if we can't beat them, we can at least mock them. What do you think, Dr. Pry?
What is the name of that song? I've never heard of that. You have such a gift for choosing songs.
That is one of my favorites from Joni Mitchell. It's called Twisted.
Twisted, okay.
Twisted by Joni Mitchell. It's been around for a long time, and it's like she just strings it together in a way that's just lilting and fun, but when you listen to the words, it's, you know, super fitting and somewhat timely for the era we're living in.
Yes, I think so. I agree. It's just, I hope you can get back control of your state in California to roll back the tragedy that's ruining people's lives. All these things are connected, you know. We tend to think of foreign policy and domestic policy, you know, as separate things, but you know they're synergistically related. You know, the more we go down the path of incompetence and socialism and trusting our fate to elites who are grossly incompetent, you know, the greater we are at risk for a World War III. We're losing World War III without a bullet being fired, finding ourselves in a new world order dominated by countries that want to destroy us, you know, or enslave us, you know.
Well, look at what's happening, you know, just at the local level. You know, at the local level, we're going to have, variant number 75. I think we're going to run out of, the Greek, I believe that's not going to go long enough. We'll be at Zulu in moments. But actually, I did see a little meme that said the final corona variant is communism. So I was like, ah, yes, yes, I'm seeing that now.
We'll all have to get the shot for that one.
Exactly. Yeah. So the shot works. The shot doesn't work. If you get the shot, you don't have to wear the mask. You got to wear the mask. I mean, we've all heard this, right? The circular logic. Yeah. And yet you have people who are routinely terrified. And just in case you're not reading anything outside of, you know, mainstream whatever and CNN and whatnot, guys, I don't care what you call it, fear porn, panic porn. But bottom line, it's like porn. People are addicted to it. You know,
yeah.
What's happening with the coronavirus? Go live your life. Good Lord. You know, go and live your life.
They're sheeple. They're sheeple. And, you know, those people who, you know, want to wear the mask, they worship Dr. Fauci, and they hang on every word that CDC says. People who like that, to those fellow citizens among us, you know, they're not the way, they're not the kind of people that the founding fathers had in mind.
No. And the funny part is, I mean, you actually have said something that's really very insightful. They hang on every word. You literally do have to hang on every word, because if you hang on the complete sentences, they don't make any sense. So you got to focus just one word at a time. Otherwise, you start to put the picture together. It's, to get those people to go along with policy that will ultimately enslave them is all part and parcel the same concept. You know, it's just the same idea.
Yeah, yeah. George Orwell warned us about this in his book 1984. You know, there's a scene toward the end of the book where Winston, the hero of the book, has fallen into the hands of Big Brother, and he's being tortured, and I can't remember how many fingers he holds up, but he keeps holding up like three or four fingers, and keeps asking Winston, how many fingers am I holding up? And Winston keeps telling him the truth, the number of fingers that he actually says. He says, no, I'm holding up one finger, okay? And they don't relent with the torture until he finally tells the lie and actually sees. He actually thinks he sees the one finger being held up. And then they've broken him, you know? And the process we're going through with the masks and all of this stuff is right out of 1984, except on a massive scale where the whole population is basically being tortured and lied to and expected to defer to Big Brother and trust Big Brother, no matter how irrational it is, no matter how contradictory of logic and the facts it is, and no matter how too many times Big Brother is obviously wrong, you know, they're winning because they have so many of our people in our population that are willing to go along with that are willing to say that there's one finger being held up, even though it's three or four, it's anything but one. And that is one of the scariest things, you know, that it's so easy for people to lose their freedom, you know, when they lose their ability to think critically, to trust themselves, trust their own judgment, trust the logic,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know, we've got a large segment of the population that just are party animals, you know, and they might as well be Nazis or communists. If the party says it's so, it must be true. And we've got a big chunk of our population that thinks and acts just that way. And perhaps an inevitable consequence of our media, all the major institutions of the country, our educational institutions, our entertainment institutions, haven't been taken over by that crowd. You know, we conservatives perhaps have had too much faith for too long in human nature. That human nature is inherently, you know, going to be skeptical and resistant to power. But really, it's not true. You have to teach people to think critically. And we haven't been doing that for a long time. You know, we've ignored the classics for a long time and the history for a long time. We're lucky. We're probably among the last generation that was taught in the classical tradition, you know, which the founders believed was necessary. They called it virtue. You know, and it was the most the ultimate check on tyranny was a virtuous people. And that doesn't just mean that you want to be good and adhere to Judeo-Christian values, but part of virtue is being able to do the hard work of being free, to inform yourself, to think critically, you know, to not trust government, you know, to be suspicious of government, because freedom is hard work. And they were always, they always wanted people, that's why they wanted government at the local level, so people could have the greatest control over their lives, and the elites at the local level would be directly subject to the supervision and punishment of the people. And it's why we have a Second Amendment, too, because if all else fails, well, then the people, you know, are the ultimate check on tyranny. But fortunately, I try to end this on a somewhat positive note, you know, maybe we're all Winston Churchill. Maybe we've got an opportunity for all of us. You know, part of having virtue also is not looking for the man on the white horse to rescue you. You know, you're going to rescue yourselves. You're going to work with your neighbors and rescue yourselves. We actually do have the ability to turn this all around within our power just by saying no.
Yeah.
You know, without guns, without violence, just by saying no. Your radio show, you're like the committees of correspondence before the American Revolution. You and your fellow conservative radio shows that are truth tellers, that give people an opportunity to hear the truth, to reach out, see, oh, there is a voice of sanity out there somewhere. You know, so they can think for themselves, maybe get organized by themselves. If 85 million Americans at some point, you know, say, no, we're not going to pay our taxes until you prove that you were legitimately elected to power, because we don't believe that the elections were free and fair. We want to know that all future elections are going to be held according to the law, the way the law provides, you know, and not rigged the way you guys are trying to rig them. We're not going to let you educate our children in critical race theory and turn them into a bunch of racists. We're not going to let you take our guns. You know, we're not going to give up our property. You know, you're not obeying the law. You're not protecting our borders. You're enforcing laws selectively. We're going to do the same thing, you know, until you start obeying the law. They can't put 85 million people in jail. And, you know, the greatest tyranny in world history was the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact states, and the elites of those countries were masters of being able to manipulate the levers of power to enslave people. Well, we don't have that problem. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Biden, these people are pikers compared to what the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact was. And I think that if they keep pushing in this direction, eventually people can get organized and just say no.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be like Ceausescu. You know, it's actually on tape. The moment Ceausescu lost power, he was given one of his six-hour speeches, and people just got sick of it. You know, the wall had come down in Berlin, and they said no to him. And the look on his face, you could just tell the cognitive dissonance. He couldn't believe it. You know, the people were rising up against him by refusing to obey his orders. And Ceausescu was out in a few months after that. And the whole Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact were thrown on the ash heap of history in less than 2 years, without a lot of bloodshed. There was some, but there wasn't much. You know, it was largely a peaceful revolution. We can do the same, and I hope we do the same. You know, because it's also right in our Constitution. You know, I think it's
exactly.
In the,
I'm sorry, we just hit the wall. We just hit the wall,
right.
And we've got to run. So. You can go back to the store and finish the shopping.
Believe me, I will have to.
No.
God bless you. Dr. Yes. Peter Vincent Pry has been our guest this hour, and we love him. Both hours, actually.
Where the feet wide,